this type of modeling was going on and decisions were being made to continue dispatching the projects as they were. And I think Robert answered that, so.
Yeah, so the answer is no, I did not call a board member. I did not reach out to the mayors. I discussed it at each Tuesday operations call. And I was operating to the operations plan.
Can I ask, because some of this is new to, I think, us as we go along. What was the letter that was placed by Andy in the newspaper? That was just raised. I don't know about that letter. We didn't see it. We didn't have a chance to read it. What was KPU's position at the time?
I'll let Andy. It was just discussing the water crisis at Swan Lake and the significant draft rate at Swan Lake. And I get into that a little bit. I don't talk about the actual newspaper article, but it does discuss at the time reasons for curtailment on September 17th. We do discuss in this why we made, because it's more than just one. It wasn't just based on this model. Like Trey mentioned, there are inflow, there's NOAA, there's the CPC, the Climate Prediction Center, talking about El Nino, that kind of thing, to where it looked like inflows were going to be at the blue or even possibly the green line, because that's what the weatherman was saying. But what we actually saw was the red line. And in reality, that is absolutely exactly what we saw. Tyee Lake typically produces 160 CFS per year. And in 2018, they produced 103 average CFS. That red line is 103. So that it's interesting to know that 2018 turned out to be the 30% below.
So just as a point of clarity.
Microphone, please.
Oh, sorry. Point of clarity, I guess, to reaffirm what Trey had mentioned, and that was the fact that that worst case scenario was not represented in any of the weather forecasts that we were getting at the time. That was a conservative estimate on our part to make sure that we erred on the side of safety, when in fact all the weather predictions that we had, the best that we had available, predicted much more favorable weather.
And that's kind of when you ask about what risk did we look at for the northern communities, that is the red line that we look at. Hey, what's the worst that could happen here?
Lisa?
I'm sure we're going to, I understand we're going through the background right now, the backstory, to help set us up for a much larger policy discussion. But I think it's important from my point of view that from this point forward, the worst case scenario be part of every discussion that we have, and that as we track things, SEPA is saying to the board and in the operations calls, and that if the worst case scenario should happen, this is where we're at. I just think it's I think it's important to make sure that we're looking at that on a regular basis. No, you guys are doing it internally.
If it's above the guide curve or below?
If it's below.
Okay. Duly noted, that can be absolutely. That's why we're here.
So on August 15th, we were still selling power to Ketchikan.
Correct.
And how long did we sell power to Ketchikan? When did we shut that off? September
17th.
So again, and I'm looking at the guide curve and saying, I'm just looking at what the differential is, and this is rough, but on September 15th, we were 100 feet lower than what you were thinking was going to be where the water, where your guide curve, what we had used to set our board-approved draft limit and everything was based off of that guide curve. On September 15th, and I'm plus or minus a little bit because I have to kind of, you know, bring it up. But we were 100 feet. We had started July at 30 feet off. September 15th, when sales were halted, we were around 100 feet off from Tyee.
That is correct.
Robert, just one quick question. Did you feel at that point with the inflows and the weather reports that we would make it up and we would get through because we were roughly where we usually are in April and September.
Absolutely, but when you curtail Tyee, it rebounds very quickly because most of the, half of the energy that's being produced is sent south. So instead of recovering at a foot or 2 feet a day, maybe four. So understanding that at the time, we had only one option. We had moved operations to Draft Swan Pass. We had moved, determined that we were either gonna curtail Tyee or not. And if we curtail Tyee, we cut off additional dedicated sales to the south. And if the rains did come in September and October, then we would have caused KPU to burn diesel. If they didn't burn any more diesel the rest of the year, they would have burned in August when we curtailed. And had they not had to burn the rest of the year, the question may have been asked, was there additional dedicated still available?
And had Ketchikan said during the summer that they didn't want to burn diesel and they wanted hydropower?
August, the end of August, they discussed in the newspaper and with us that they intended on burning September 10th. We could be on September
17th. For hydro at that point.
Well, there are some obligations under the power sales agreement to sell additional dedicated when it's available. So I think that comes into the conversation as well.
I think that's the bottom line discussion that we're going to have is whether if there's additional dedicated output, do we sell that at the risk of the member utilities? And I think that's the conversation that ultimately we're headed to.
And that's where we're heading, exactly. And that's why we do these models in the red line. And to mention, I can make that red line a lot higher by saying 50% below average, or if I said 100% below average. The challenge is realistically, industry standard, you base risk on an industry standard outrage. Now, in 2018, there's no doubt that that's an outlier. We haven't seen that for 20 years. So to base our every year operations plan on once in a 20 or 30 year event, we would still tie in twice as much. We reduce additional dedicated by half, possibly, or more. And so there's more risk in doing that than there is into estimating what the worst case scenario is per industry standard and operating accordingly. That's my interpretation of the operations plan and how to do prudent utility practice. Yes, sir.
So Robert, I have a question. And I thank you for running these and taking us through this. So you end up running this model or models on a particular date. It looks like there's an origin date there. If you've got an arrow at the low point on the 30% below inflow line, but if you look, there's an origin, and what's the date on that? That's when you run this thing. You slide the sleepy right there. Yes.
That's when we start. Yep. Yeah, that's when you run it.
That's when you run it. And what we see on all of these models that you run, they all have an indication that they go up in elevation and then come back down, if you notice. So they all have they all assume a certain inflow, an increasing inflow. And what surprised us when we're looking at that, if you superimpose the actual elevation onto that, you would see that the slope is almost 90 degrees to that. It's decaying. So in each case, the actual is decaying while the model is predicting an increase.
This is a curtail model?
This is the actual model of the lake elevation for that time period.
I understand, but we weren't curtailed, Andy. At that time, if you're using the actual model of the lake, mm-hmm. you had Ketchikan loads and Tyee loads.
I know, but this is a validity check for the model.
Right. And no, it's not, because you're adding Ketchikan loads to the model. This is Petersburg and Wrangell only loads. This is if we curtailed, how would Tyee respond to Petersburg and Wrangell loads?
Okay. Well, I thought you said you'd already through the scheduler, you had already shifted the bias onto Swan Lake. So you were impacting this less through the scheduler, and removing the part of the dedicated piece to.
It says right there, summer 2018, if Tyee curtailed on August 15th,
uh-huh.
this is the model if it was Petersburg and Rangel loans only. And that's the intent here. Why would we, you know, we need to make a decision on, is Petersburg and Rangel going to be okay? The red line. We expected the blue line, but we were conservative to the red. Is Petersburg and Rangel going to be okay? We take Ketchikan out of the picture. This is a curtailed model.
This is essentially a risk assessment for the north end, this exercise here.
This is not our typical model. So it is the same model, but instead of modeling with Petersburg and Rangel loads, and when we do it for the operations year, we balance how much load can we utilize an additional dedicated, and how will the lake respond with Ketchikan blended into that. So this was for risk assessment only.
I appreciate that.
That's fine, sure.
The question I have is, you're using the inflow, the lines are obviously impacted by your projected inflows that you're anticipating from your weather forecasting from NOAA, correct? And you're also probably looking at an average, is my guess? Or will you just use, when you were, the line, the major impact to that line is inflows. I mean, demand is one thing, but you kind of already have a feeling on demand. And I guess temperature would be the other thing, because the loads will increase.
I do have an indication on demand, but the problem, another issue at August 15th is demand went up 160% on Ketchikan. We could not predict that.
150%?
160% of load on SEPA, it was increased by 160%.
It was 100
across the system, or?
It was 160% of average.
Of average.
And it was due to a decrease in hydro generation in KPU. And I can go, I show those slides.
So that was across the system.
KPU's burden on the SEPA system, which we had predicted to be 100%, for example, was at 160%.
Again, I want to come back to what you viewed as the safe, the, you know, this is your risk assessment with your inflows that you anticipated. And if we take a look, and I appreciate that we want to use that FERC, but FERC, that FERC number is, that's absolute desperation. And we're going to talk about that, I know. But basically, if we backed it off to what the board had approved in the ops plan, and it was 10 feet difference, that's 14.5 feet, would be our buffer. If, and that was based on all the inflows working out right and the weather working right?
No, that's based on no inflows, the lowest case, the worst case scenario.
So that's based on no inflows, worst case scenario, and you figured that we would be 24.5 feet above intake.
That's 30% below inflows. Yeah, that was worst case scenario.
Okay.
September and October typically bring
so
rain.
We had really good inflows, and we are, I mean,
if you had average,
we're at the bottom, basically.
If you had just average inflows, you'd be on the blue line. But we did not have average inflows. September and October and into November, we had zero.
That model's saying zero inflows, and we had some inflows into Ta'i. We had several bumps through
the fall. This is 30% below the average. So I'm going to go back and kind of explain this again. There are 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, every one of these dotted lines are how the actual inflows from that year would reflect on the model if we started at this point. The dark lines are an average of those 5-6 years. Green is 10% above, blue is average, which is what NOAA was predicting, and red is like, you notice there's no year anywhere that we've seen that is low as that red line. It's lower than any year we've seen. That's how conservative this red line is. 30% below any year we have on record.
Okay. So just a couple clarifications, 30% below the average. And I think might have misspoke when we said zero inflows. It's actually based on 30% inflows.
30% below the
average. Below the average. So just wanted to make sure that was clarified.
If we were to operate on zero inflows, we would, Ta'i would be empty because it would never have inflows.
Correct. I appreciate that. I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around what the level what the comfort level was at SEPA, the comfort level was in terms of, as we progressed through the fall, what was your comfort level as we proceeded to each thing? Because I sensed that, you know, things were low in our board meeting in June, I guess it was, but I certainly didn't feel any sense of urgency in that meeting.
We didn't feel urgency until we curtailed.
Until when?
Until we curtailed. That was the, at the point of curtailment, there was, and I'm going to go into these, that was the reason why we had more than just models for curtailment. The models were showing, even though we were expecting the blue line the whole time, but we made sure that we didn't go past the red at Abrasky. But there are more things that play into the factor of why we curtailed, and I'd like to get to those.
Sure, you bet.
I'd like to make a comment, if I may. So prior to this, I mean, we had a concern too. KPU had a concern. And it was just a unique fit. I ran into a couple of the forecasters from NOAA. They were here in town in late July. And one of the things that I'm not a meteorologist, but one of the things they didn't know was this thing that they called atmospheric rivers. So learning about this from these meteorologists, atmospheric rivers, so that was a term coined in the later 1990s by some lead meteorologist. And it has to deal with conveying water in the form of vapor off the ocean and depositing on land. And they study these, right? And they're saying that any given time, there's only like three of these around in the world at any particular time. And the atmospheric rivers that are typically dumping rain in southeast were non-existent. And they said that their models were predicting that they would continue to be non-existent into August. And it was after that that I got interviewed by the newspaper, and I thought, well, my goodness, if this persists, as these guys predicted, these are the two leading forecasters at NOAA and UNO, that...
Is that Aaron Jacobs?
Aaron Jacobs is not one of the forecasters, but he's one of the voices for the whole organization.
Okay.
These guys work in the background for
did
Aaron.
Did you bring that up at a Tuesday operations call?
I did.
You did?
Yeah, and then if you recall also here, so I got interviewed by the paper, and looking at the graphs, I didn't do this extensive modeling. I just did basically what you did, what it would take to get back to historic levels. And I didn't think we were going to make it. And running lines, curves, I figured by September 10th we would be running diesel. And that's what I indicated, unless something broke loose. Well, something didn't break loose. Now that was not well favored, right? So the SEPA office called me in and had a discussion and asked me not to do that again. Funny, a week and a half later, we're running diesels. So I wasn't off by much in my prediction. And then we
just asked you not to put in the paper SEPA's name. That was all we asked. I'd like to comment on that as well. In the article, and we don't need to go, I think we got time to do this later,
mm-hmm.
but the article did state that you mentioned that if we got the predicted inflows, that Ketchikan may not even have to burn diesel. You made that statement in the paper. I'd like to make that clear.
So I think for right now, let's take a 5-minute break. Everybody refresh your coffee, and then we'll get into the rest of this presentation.
Good idea, Mr. Chairman.